Hey, this is Tom Waddle. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship. Find out how to be a part of it at ESPNFFC.com.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Fridays this time of year that gets me more excited than Fridays other times of the year because it's a football Friday. I get a huge Campbell Coastal Carolina game tonight that I've got money on in the first half.
How dare you?
-14.5 with the Chanticleers.
How dare you go against the Fighting Camels? How dare you?
Wait, so it's the Chanticleers versus...
The Chanticleers versus the Fighting Camels.
Yes.
Wow, I can get behind that.
Did you see the Chanticleers take care of the Kansas Jayhawks last week? Did they end up winning that game?
They did, yes.
Thank you. Take that, Danny
Zetterman.
What the hell
is a Chanticleer?
It's a fake bird.
I don't care. It's something that beat Kansas and won me cash. And I'd also like, considering this is a Football Friday, it's also a selfish Friday. I'd like to thank Jimmy Butler for helping the Miami Heat get past the Boston Celtics.
Gave out that winner.
On the money line and with the points. They were unnecessary, but I sprinkled the infield with both. I'd like to thank Joe Burrow for leading his Bengals down the field in Cleveland late in that game last night, chucking the pill more than 60 times.
Another winner.
I mean, it was just boom, 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 boom. We did play the over or the first half under.
Yeah,
I think Sylvie would like to have a word with you.
I'd like to give a blank you to Fat Randy for making that field goal.
Yeah, Fat Randy Bullocks. Yeah. Is that what his name is? All I can tell you is he made the extra points in the backdoor cover touchdown. So I told my wife at the time we're watching the game, and she's like, why do you care about this, what's going on right now? I said, because if that overweight kicker misses this thing, it was a penalty shot.
They all count the same, Tommy, as we're betting Bundesliga.
I'm trying to watch the U.S. Open, and I can't get the golf.
Your U.S. Open can stick it because I'm watching soccer right now, and I have money on it. I feel like as a fellow gambler, you would understand. You have no money on the U.S. Open. If you're like, I got money on Tiger to hit blah, 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 blah. I've got Dustin Johnson to win, blah, blah, blah. I'd be like, okay, fine. You've got money. I will turn on. But
We've started this Football Friday on a selfish note, discussing the plays that we had yesterday. And I don't want to take
any... It's an accountability Friday. I gave out a loser. That's fine.
Good job. Losers give out losers.
Whatever.
Winners give out winners.
Yeah, I gave out a loser, but I still had the Heat money line, and I still had the...
courtesy of your friend over here.
Yes, and I still had the Bengals plus the points.
Courtesy of your friend over here.
Oh, I had that a while ago.
I don't think so. Yeah, no, I think we're robbing Eric Ostrowski, who's in for Chris Bleck. Chris Bleck and Sylvie do not like football, so they decided to take Fridays off during this season. But Eric is a diehard White Sox fan. If you haven't, you know, heard that before, we certainly heard his thoughts yesterday as the White Sox clinch a playoff berth for the first time since 2008. Are you still basking in the glory? Last we talked yesterday late afternoon, you and your father were having some pretty warm and celebratory text exchanges.
I did. I actually, on my way home after the show yesterday, decided to swing by my dad's house, my parents' house, had a couple beers, and honestly, it was fun. We were chatting. It's weird. We had this moment where, like, should we, like, yeah, it's been 12 years, it's exciting, but are we too excited? Like, it's a playoff berth when there's eight teams now.
So what was your conclusion?
We pushed it right back to the side, and we're having so much more fun. We were making fun of Kenny Williams and how much we love Rick Hahn now. So it was just like...
How many beers did you and your old man knock down?
I was driving, so I have a 2-beer limit when I'm driving, so I had to drive home. But my dad was doing some work.
Oh, good job.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
Good job, Dad. Good work. But you're still basking in the glow of what the White Sox have done.
It was like at one moment, like, are we going over the top? And it's like, ah, screw it. It's been 12 years. Yeah. Like, I saw on Twitter last night, people are posting pictures of 12 years ago and then yesterday. I went back to see what I looked like 12 years ago. I couldn't post a single picture.
No.
It wasn't a sober picture in the bunch. Yeah. That was college.
You're all grown up now.
Yeah.
You're all grown up. Which Sox team shows up in Cincinnati today? I don't even know who's pitching. I believe one of their bullpen arms, I think, is taking the ball, right? And it's a Reds team that needs to win. Do the White Sox exhale? I say no. They've got a 3-game lead in the American League Central. but that hasn't been wrapped up just yet. I hope they don't exhale, because I bet the White Sox last night against my Reds, knowing that that lineup is not going to lay down. They don't have any of that pause in the action in them. They've won 25 of their last, 23 of the last 28 games. I don't see this team having a letdown after the celebratory environment, I'm sure, that existed in their clubhouse after clinching a playoff spot for the first time in 2008.
Well, no lineup yet.
I still bet them. I did the, that's an amateur move on my behalf.
I wonder if it's a hungover lineup or if it's a regular lineup.
I know, but like, I think even a hungover lineup of White Sox batters can put it on the Reds. So, and I think the Reds are pitching, what's his name? I call him Maley, but is it pronounced differently? M-A-H-L-E?
It's Mail. But I'm not
it's
sure.
It's male. Yeah, is it male? Sure. Anyway, he doesn't deliver very often.
Right.
No, he's giving
not right now. It's a little delayed.
Yeah, he's giving up 6 home runs right now. So.
Yeah. Well, it could be a dinger fest.
Dinger fest.
That ball flies out of the park at Great American Ballpark, or so I'm told. I've never been there. I went to Riverfront quite a bit when I was a youngster, but I've never been into the new ballpark, which is now probably 15 years old. But that is a home run haven, and if it's warm, if it's kind of a humid night in Cincinnati, which you tend to get this time of year, the dong machine could be on full speed ahead.
That dong, a dong, dong, dong.
So I'm excited to see what the White Sox do. I don't expect them to exhale. I expect them to keep playing. I don't think that this will be one of those games where they kind of overlook anything. They are going to get the Reds' best effort. The Reds are still fighting. I believe the Reds find themselves in second place in the NL Central, which means they are currently a playoff team.
Some White Sox news. They're calling up one of their top picks, Garrett Crotchet, from Schaumburg. He's going to join the bullpen and could make the postseason.
Do they call
roster.
Him the Crotchet Rocket?
They could.
I mean, we're trying to have a family show here. And
well, wait a second. A family show? We spent the first 8 minutes talking about gambling.
It's legal. It's legal.
I know it's legal, but it's like you don't want little
Johnny. I'm not going
Johnny
down the street to Joey Bag of Donuts and owe him $500. I'm going on my FanDuel app, promo code Abdallah. And betting.
Who are you betting on tonight's college football game?
I have not yet bet tonight's college football game or tonight's NBA game, but I might put a little money on Kyle Hendricks tonight.
All right, think about this. You've got the Cubs hosting the Twins. Twins, obviously, after losing 3 of 4 to the White Sox on the South side, are looking to bounce back. So my thought is you're going to get the Twins focused tonight. You've got the Sox in Cincinnati facing a Reds team that needs to keep winning. They've been hot. I think they've won 4 or 5 in a row. They need to stay hot to maintain a chance to get to the postseason. We'll see what the Sox look like. You've got the Lakers and the Nuggets tipping off the game one of the Western Conference Finals. You've got the U.S. Open. You've got Campbell and Coastal Carolina squaring off.
There's an MLS game tonight, too.
There's
you want to go
MLS
over that?
Game. I mean, and of course,
you want to sprint every field?
It's a football Friday, which is always so much fun. The Bears injury report is out. I think we'll bring that to people a little bit later in the show. You'll like what you see from it. Jeff Dickerson will break everything down for us as well at 3 o'clock. I spent the morning last night consuming Bengals and Browns. I was entertained. And then I spent the morning watching the All-22 Bears and Lions. So I do have some thoughts for all of you in a bit.
What did you think of Joe Burrow's second game yesterday?
I thought Joe Burrow, when I talk about quarterbacks and I say to you, well, he looks like he came out of the womb playing the position. What I mean by that, and I've said that about Jimmy Garoppolo in the past. He looks like a quarterback. Now, Jimmy's going to take some risks, probably more than Kyle Shanahan would like, certainly more than I would like if I had, the 49ers in certain situations. But he's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback yet. But he looks the part. He processes things. He looks like he's in control. I thought Joe Burrow looked like a guy who'd been in the league for several years. And not only was that only his second NFL game, but he had like 2 days to get ready because they played Sunday at home against the Chargers, a game that the hefty kicker kind of blew. That game should have gone to overtime. Joe Burrow in that game led them down the field late to get into field goal range to tie that game up. And then last night, brought his team back and obviously scored a late touchdown, was asked to do a lot. Joe Burrow only had a couple of days to get ready to play his second game in the National Football League. He's got an awful offensive line in front of him. I thought Joe Burrow handled himself quite well. I loved what I saw from Joe Burrow last night. Does he still need to get used to the speed of the game? No doubt. I mean, you saw that with the strip sack from Myles Garrett. I thought that that was an example of a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, who isn't quite yet aware of how fast the game is at the next level. I thought there were a couple of other instances inside the pocket where the pressure almost got to him, whereas there were moments, I think, at LSU last year where the game wasn't as fast and he could take his time and knew he could take his time. Everything's got to speed up for him. But all in all, I thought Joe Burrow, the best compliment I can give a quarterback is he looked like he belonged.
Agreed? And imagine in... Like, normally the cards are stacked against a rookie quarterback to begin with the difficulty of the game. Yeah. He had this type of offseason and this type of training, no preseason OTAs. Games. So he didn't
no preseason.
Get,
yeah. You're right, Eric. I mean, this is a very difficult environment for a quarterback, a rookie quarterback to step into. It's a tough environment for any rookie, regardless of position, to step into. But certainly a quarterback, as you mentioned, Eric, with no reps, no OTAs. You know, you're doing all of your, you know, information gathering via Zoom calls. Then you get to camp. It's an abbreviated camp. You've got no preseason games. And you come out and you play two NFL games in 4 days.
Well, you mentioned his lack of offensive line. He threw the ball 61 times yesterday. So they had a lot of work cut out for them. And he also, yeah, he does. He did have to go through the shortened preseason and no preseason games.
I know it's only he's 35 years old.
No, but I'm saying he had Joe Brady at LSU. He had a professional coordinator. They ran a professional system.
That's fine.
They were running.
But
he was in that room every single day because he wasn't going to classes because he was a graduate transfer and he only take a couple online classes.
But Joe Brady can only tell him that the game's faster.
But
he's got to experience that for himself. And he has to. The strip sack that came at the hands of Myles Garrett is one of those learning moments. If it happens again, then you fire on him and you tell him, hey, listen.
Yeah.
But that's a learning experience. That's like, hey, big fella, these guys come at you a whole lot quicker than they did, even in the SEC.
But what I'm saying is if anybody was ready to make the jump faster, it was Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Because he's prepared to make it faster than Kyler Murray or even Baker Mayfield when they were coming in or, you know, any like Trevor Lawrence when he comes in next year. Joe Burrow was set up to make that leap quicker. Because of his experience at LSU.
That's a very fair statement. But again, the lack of OTAs and the lack of practice and the lack of preseason games against NFL caliber opponents still makes it difficult. But you're right. I mean, Joe Burrow had an advantage that maybe two or others didn't. All
Does
things
it make
considered,
you a little jealous?
I think anytime you see a young quarterback look like he belongs, it makes anybody a little jealous, unless you're a team that is completely secure with what you have at the QB position. Like, I'm not going to spend all day today drilling 10. I'm just not.
However,
like, and once again, I will tell you what I see. And this morning, I spent a good hour and a half watching the All-22. And I'll tell you what I saw. There were some things that, you know, were enhanced. But all in all, it was what I expected. But I will, you know, kind of break down what it was that I saw on the tape and how I feel it projects going forward. Bears get the Giants. I think you learned it last night. Week one, things can change drastically from week one to week two. Look at the Browns. The Browns were a hot mess, albeit against a very good Ravens team in week one. Came out last night. Stefanski had a good game plan set for Baker Mayfield. They ran the hell out of the football against a Bengals run defense that is awful. And they took some pressure off of Baker Mayfield. I thought Baker Mayfield also, aside from the one pick, which was a big pick, but all in all, I thought Baker Mayfield had himself a nice game as well. The point I'm making is week one, Monday Night Football, the Giants played a very good Pittsburgh Steelers team, in particular their defense. Daniel Jones found himself under duress more than any quarterback in week one of the NFL season. Saquon Barkley had about 5 yards on 16 carries. I'm not telling you they're coming to Soldier Field to light things up. I would just not take them for granted to the point where you think that they can't put a little something on you. So just keep that in mind. But yes, I watched the All 22 last night. I'll tell you what I saw, and we'll continue our pigskin conversation on this Football Friday.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I guess before we get to any further football conversation, we should tell people how they can consume this product other than just listening on the radio, right, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, you could always, you know, download the beautiful, majestic ESPN Chicago app.
Why is it beautiful and majestic?
Because it's great. You open it up, it starts playing. You can find all the podcasts right there. You can listen live there, every show, all that good stuff. You can watch us. You can watch Waddle as he, you know, yesterday you were doing a lot of stretching.
I'm going to continue to stretch. Okay. I spent a good bit of time stretching and rehabbing last night.
So you can watch him stretch.
I'm going to stretch.
You can watch him look like Gruden, is what most of the Twitchers say, or the dude from Cobra Kai. You can do that on Twitch. So you can either download the Twitch app.
How do I do that?
Go to the App Store.
Okay.
Type in Twitch.
Twitch.
Download.
Okay. Download. Type in download.
No.
Just hit download.
God, you're old. And then search for ESPN 1000 Chicago, or on your browser, you open up a cool tab and go to twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago right there.
I forgot to tweet out what's on the show today because I suck at this when I'm, you know, Sylvie doesn't like football, so he takes Fridays off. Bleck doesn't
Does
like football
Mason
either.
Does Mason take the day off too? I guess we don't get a Mason.
I think so. But then I forget. So I apologize. So this is what we're doing. We're talking football today. Next. No, that's what we're doing. We're celebrating a White Sox return to the postseason for the first time since 2008. Speaking of Bears and Giants, Jeff Dickerson will join us at 3 o'clock as we'll break down the game. Doug Kazarian, our buddy, it's gambling time on Fridays. As if you can't tell, it is. You watch him on the Daily Wager every day on ESPN2. You hear him on the Behind the Bets podcast. He is our gambling expert. We will talk to him at 4:20. We're going to preview like last week. I think this is a staple, Adam. You weren't here for this last week, Eric, but we previewed like experts every game in the week one.
We previewed every game. I don't know if we were experts about it. You're an expert. You're the former player.
Well, we went over and decided. I think I was like 12-4
for straight up winners.
Yeah. 12
expert and friends. How about that?
Yeah, experts and friends. Whatever. But that and then Mark Giangreco at 5:30. So that's what we're going to do. All right. Like I said to you, I watched the. I think it's great. For $99. You can purchase NFL Game Pass, and you get access to all of the NFL film, all of it. You get the coaches' film. You get the TV version of all of it. Have you ever watched it, Adam?
I've seen clips of the All 22. I've never watched like a full game on it like you have, but I've seen whatever the football nerds tweet out.
Yeah.
I can watch it. I watch the clips there.
And do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a good view. You get to see everything. You get to see all the mistakes and all the all the good reads and bad plays, and it's mostly there to point out mistakes. Like people really be like, "Look at this." It's more like, "What was he doing?"
Well, I would start with, I watch it to see if it kind of matches up with what I think went on, without seeing it, sitting on my couch on a Sunday. So I would suggest to you that everything I saw this morning is everything that I saw this weekend. Like, how would you describe what you saw this weekend from your Chicago Bears?
I would say that the first three quarters were kind of what I expected from Trubisky, with no preseason and no 10 real practices with pads.
Yeah.
And then the fourth quarter was him taking advantage of a very beat up Lions secondary and the Lions not having one of their key offensive weapons to answer.
I think that's fair. I would say to you, I'll start with the positives. I thought the throw that Mitch made to Anthony Miller, I didn't see every play or every highlight from every game this weekend, but I can't imagine there was a better throw made by a quarterback throughout all of week one. Like, I saw a couple of the throws that Aaron Rodgers made. They were brilliant. I mean, I'm sure there were some other throws that Russell Wilson made that were fantastic. We saw that on Thursday night, the week before, we saw Patrick Mahomes do some wonderful things. The throw that Mitch made to Anthony Miller was as good as it gets. I thought, and as I told you guys yesterday, I thought Matt Nagy had himself a fantastic afternoon. I thought when he came out, you saw what Matt did. He tailored his offense to Mitch and tried to take advantage of the things that Mitch does well and try to protect him from the things that he doesn't do well. And you can't always protect someone. Sometimes their inefficiencies will still bleed through, despite all that the coaches do to try to put you in a position to succeed. I thought, again, sticking with the good, I thought the fourth quarter was as good an effort as you'll see both from Mitch and from Matt Nagy. What Matt Nagy identified, I believe they lost their second cornerback, Desmond Trufant, like a minute or something to go in the third quarter, right? The entire fourth quarter, what Matt Nagy did was he schemed his offense, the passing plays, to take advantage of the kid McCray, who was like the fourth or fifth guy.
He did it instantly. Right when they came back out of that TV timeout, the catch wasn't successful, but they went right at him.
It's unbelievable if you watch the film what they did to try to isolate him. They did it on the touchdown pass, which was a beautiful roll-up by Mitch. It was a great play call. They knew that they had three backup cornerbacks, so what they were going to do is work a little boot action, a little pick action. Beautifully designed, beautifully executed by Wims and Allen Robinson, and beautifully thrown by Mitchell Trubisky. It starts with the coach acknowledging and recognizing that there's somebody out there to go after. And I believe his name is McCray. You know, there's a reason why he is probably a special teams player and a guy that doesn't play unless there's a bunch of people, Tony McCray, that are hurt. And that's part of the NFL. When you bring in a backup, good teams will go after that guy. Touchdown number one was that. Or maybe the first touchdown was the fade to
Jimmy Graham.
But that's another design where you split Graham wide out.
6'5 versus 5'10.
Probably 6'7 versus 5'10. Right, yeah. So you've got an 8-inch advantage. It's a great call. It's a great isolation. And it's a very good execution from Mitch. And then again, the play, which is just phenomenal, the Anthony Miller touchdown, is just a beauty. The play call is fantastic. You have a single high safety. You have man coverage. This is the coolest thing I saw from the entire All-22. When that play develops, the line of scrimmage, okay, you got a single high safety. You got man across the board. You've got Anthony Miller in the slot on the right side. You've got Allen Robinson in the slot on the left side. Allen Robinson runs like a five-yard stick route, turns to the outside. His back is to the play. His back is to Mitch. His back is to the play. His face is to the sideline. Before the ball probably is halfway to Anthony Miller, Allen Robinson, not even facing the play, puts his hands up for a touchdown. What does that tell you? It tells you that the play was perfectly designed and they knew the only thing that would keep it from working and succeeding would be player error. That's what Allen Robinson was telling you with what he was doing. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen. It was a cool part of it. The ball is in the air for like 5 yards, and Allen Robinson, not even looking at it, has got his hands up because he knows it's the perfect play call by design. As soon as you see the defense that they set up, Anthony Miller runs a fantastic route, throws to the corner, and as I said to you, I don't believe there was a better thrown ball in all of week one by a quarterback than that pass. So credit where credit is due. Mitch never got down. He was resilient as hell. Could have hung his head, but did not. They were very fortunate that the Lions were without their top three cornerbacks. Matt Nagy went right after them. Why Matt Patricia, who runs a lot of man with single high safety, why he did that and didn't back up into zone, I have no idea. But give Matt Nagy a ton of credit for identifying what he saw and attacking that. There's your positive. The first three quarters were exactly what I thought they were. It was a bit of a hot mess. Mitch from the waist down is a frantic mess. His footwork gets him into trouble. He shuffles too much. He's too jittery in the pocket. There was a couple of throws, the one to Harris, the tight end in the end zone. The other one that was supposed to go to David Montgomery that was tipped should have been intercepted down on the goal line in the fourth quarter. Those are two felony crimes in terms of football speak. Like if there is a football portion of Statesville, you do a nickel for each of those mistakes, each of those crimes. Mitch would have had 10 years.
Double nickel.
because you get 5 years for the football crime that was missing Harris in the end zone. You get another 5 years for not floating that ball to David Montgomery. You spend 10 years in football jail for that. Those are inexcusable mistakes. You saw Matt try to protect him with a ton of running game. I thought the offensive line played well. I thought Ifedi was very, very solid. I thought that their boot action, I thought everything they did in the first 45 minutes of the game from a coaching perspective was done well. I thought David Montgomery ran hard. What you saw in the first 45 minutes is what keeps you concerned about Mitch. From the pocket, he struggles. He struggles with a lot of stuff. But in the last 15 minutes, when you can isolate some of the things that they were able to isolate with the injuries to the Lions secondary, you can find yourself in some one-on-one matchups where you've got some one-read, single-look-see throws, and you can get Mitch out on the edge. The scramble and the throw to Jimmy Graham was brilliant. The scramble for 25 yards was fantastic. There were two or three throws there that you just are inexcusable misses, though. So at the end of the day, it was pretty much exactly what I expected to see prior to putting on the film. Fourth quarter, great coaching, great execution by the quarterback, great individual plays. Anthony Miller looked fantastic on a number of catches. Ball looks like it's floating a little bit on Mitch. Like, I don't know if there's the grip was a problem or something, but the ball, I showed you, Adam, the sideline catch, one-handed catch that Anthony Miller made. The ball was, maybe I showed, I was showing Carmen DeFalco. The ball came out, it's an unbelievable catch to begin with, but the fact that it wasn't a tight spiral makes that catch even more difficult for Anthony Miller. So there's some things that Mitch needs to clean up, especially from the pocket. Things that have been a concern now for several years. But again, as I said yesterday, he gave you enough depending on which side of the ledger you're on. If you're an Art and Mitch supporter, he gave you enough in the third quarter, making three fantastic plays to lead you to believe that he will at some point, the light will go on and it will all be good. And if you are somebody who is skeptical about his ability to function inside the pocket and process things, that's the camp I'm in. You got 45 minutes worth of tape to tell you that that is still a problem as well. So really, after looking at the film, another tip of the cap to Matt Nagy and how he schemed things throughout the game, but certainly in the fourth quarter. Tip of the cap for Mitch for executing things in the fourth quarter. But obviously some things that have to be cleaned up going forward, or this team, like I said, you give that effort to 28 other teams and you're coming away with an L. You're not going to beat many teams other than the Detroit Lions. So that's basically what I saw. 312-332-3776 if you have some thoughts on what I had to say or how you think the Bears match up with this Giants team. It is a Football Friday. We'll continue to break down this matchup, Bears hosting the Giants, when we come back.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Can we turn on the U.S. Open now?
No, give me one more goal. Come on.
They scored with a minute.
It's
4-0.
I'm pretty sure he said that a goal ago.
He did not. It's the U.S. Open. This is a rando game for the Bundesliga.
Listen, the people want to talk to you.
And we'll get to them. Can I just have the U.S. Open?
No, because the second I put on golf, you stop listening.
That's not true.
You stop listening.
That's not true. I could say the same thing about you. When you've got money on a soccer game, it's hard to get your attention.
Not true.
By the way, speaking of that, is there any chance you could tell the fine people out there what's on the Bears injury list? I think it's going to be good news for people.
What'd you say?
Exactly.
Yeah, the Bears injury report. So today, everybody practiced. Khalil Mack was limited. Robert Quinn had full participation.
Yes, that's Akeem what I'm speaking
Hicks,
of.
Full participation. He had an illness yesterday, so he's full participation
right,
today.
He doesn't have an injury. He'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So for Sunday, both Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn are questionable. When Khalil Mack met the media, he said he's going to play. We are still waiting for Robert Quinn. He met the media. He just wouldn't say whether or not he was going to play. He said it's kind of more of a game day feel. So he's,
I think JD JD was tweeting about him. We'll get some update on that from JD at the top.
But
of the
it
hour.
Should be. I mean,
full go.
Yeah. I mean, and if they don't,
listen.
Here's my theory. There's been a lot of theories about Robert Quinn, right? Floated around about why he's missed the first game and why he's been.
For the record, I'm not participating in any of the theories. I'm just sitting back. I have no idea.
I'm wondering if this vaunted Bears defense looked at the matchups and said, hey, Robert Quinn, he's coming in. He's going to have a delayed ramp up because of the injury he's going through, whatever it is. There's no preseason.
It's high ankle sprain, right?
High ankle sprain. Those are tough to deal with. We want him for the whole season.
Yeah.
If he misses the first two very winnable games, it's not the end of the world.
Maybe that's why they made several of the decisions that they made.
I think, I honestly
maybe
think
maybe you're
is.
Ramping up theory with regard to positions is why it's...
I think that you can beat the Giants without Robert Quinn. You should be able to.
Daniel Jones was pressured, I believe, on 54% of the snaps on Monday night.
You know how much I love
DVOA. It was the NFL. He was under pressure more than any other quarterback in week one.
You know how much I love DVOA.
Yeah, you are married to it.
They are the Giants are the 30th ranked offense, according to DVOA, and the 22nd ranked defense. According to DVOA. Now, the discrepancy.
And they faced a Pittsburgh defense that's an elite defense.
I'm aware. I'm telling you, you don't want to know where the major discrepancy is? Major discrepancy? Besides defense. Special teams. The Giants are 7th in special teams, and the Bears are 16th.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Field position. Just watch out. Just remember.
Last year, the Steelers gave up 304 yards and 19 points per game. It's a pretty good defense. I think they led the league in sacks, so they were in the top two or three. So, anyway, I think it's going to be great to have Robert Quinn in uniform, if that's the case, and we'll talk to JD at 3 o'clock. We asked for your phone calls on the upcoming game out at Soldier Field. Jason's in Plainfield. He has thoughts. Jason, welcome on a Friday.
What's up, guys? Happy Friday to you.
Same to you.
Yeah, man. Hey, we beat the Giants no matter what, man. It's great news. I appreciate the update. I'm glad to hear that Quinn is back and he practiced full. So I got good hopes that he's going to show up and show out. Hopefully Khalil Mack is back from his week hiatus, whatever you want to call it, last week. But when you guys brought the stats out there, I guess he had the highest average.
He was in the top five, I think, in terms of win percentage with regard to pass rushes, right, Adam? I think you were the first one that mentioned that several days ago. Mm-hmm. So while he may not have had a sack and it didn't look like he was wreaking the havoc that he has in the past, statistically, the numbers said that he was having success.
He's favorable amongst nerds.
Right.
Absolutely. And the Bears, I think the problem is the Giants is not too good. Their offensive line is terrible. Saquon is amazing, and I think Daniel Jones is the truth. But their offensive line is terrible. So I don't see them stopping our front seven, and they're giving our secondary enough time to keep up with their pretty decent receivers.
Yeah, we appreciate the call, Jason. Have a great weekend. Look, this Bears defense gave up, 300 or 430-some yards or 425 yards, 435, whatever it was, to the Lions last week. That was very unbear-like with regard to what we've seen in recent years. So I think that there is a concerted effort to make some significant improvement on Sunday on that side of the football. Even Matt Nagy, I think, had some thoughts about how it just wasn't who they are and what he expects from them. Ross is in Denver calling us from Denver. Hey, Ross.
What's up, Waddle? Happy Friday.
Same to you, my friend.
Hey, I had a question for you about Jalen Johnson. I read that he was the first Bears rookie cornerback to start on week one since like 96. How'd you feel about his performance?
I didn't spend a ton of time. I normally don't on the defense watching the all 22 tape, but just sitting on my couch on Sunday. Again, I think the greatest compliment I could give a young quarterback is he looks like he belongs. I think the same is true for a cornerback, Ross. There were some good plays. There were a couple of misses, but that's going to happen to veteran cornerbacks, much less rookies. I didn't think he looked overwhelmed in the slightest, which is very, very encouraging because teams are going to come after him knowing that they've got Fuller on the other side. So I guess, again, the greatest compliment I could give him is in week one as an NFL player, I thought he looked like he belonged.
And the Lions have a real wide receiving core. Like they have dudes over there.
They were without Kenny Galladay,
which is their guy. But I thought he was active, and like you said, he was in position most of the game to make the right play.
The big test for him will be against the Falcons.
Yes, there's no question. Yes, I mean you're going to have.
I don't know if you're going to get it this week. Against the Giants. Although Daniel Jones can throw it, so we'll see.
No, I think he's going to be a good quarterback.
I don't know if he's the truth, like our last caller said, but he's decent.
Let's get to Frank in Lafayette. Frank, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, Waddle?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, boss. I was calling because I agree with everything you said about the whole Mitch thing. I want to get your from what you saw. To me, against zone, we normally see Trubisky look more confused. I felt like more often Sunday he was making the right reads. I think his mechanics and the throws, a lot of those throws are terrible. And is that something that you think can be because they didn't play in the preseason? I'm not saying that he's going to be Mahomes or anything like that, but I feel like he was improved in that area.
And I would say this, Frank, and thanks for the call. I'm concerned because in the fourth year of his time in the National Football League, he still does things from the pocket that leave me more than a touch concerned. Things that should have been cleaned up already. You should have seen improvement in certain areas. And the fact that there hasn't been improvement with the mechanics and the breakdown of the footwork, and when the processing goes wrong, you don't trust what you see, then it immediately starts to deteriorate what you're doing physically. Those are all things that are very concerning to me. What was encouraging to me was that the coach did less of that Sunday that he did last year, which was leave him back in shotgun to survey the field. I don't think Mitch is ever going to, I mean, we could sit around and hope beyond hope that somehow, some way, Mitch is going to clean up his mechanics and he's going to be more stable in the pocket. He's going to be less itchy. I mean, it drives you crazy watching how frantic he is below the waist with his feet and shuffling in and out. And sometimes he just needs to stick his feet in the ground and plant and throw. And he doesn't do that. But when he gets out on the edge and he can be an athlete, now he's a threat to run it. He's a very accurate passer on the run. That's where I think that, you know, teams, they don't want to see him there. They want to keep him in the pocket and make him process things and play the position from the pocket spot. That's why you saw Matt, I think, play him under center. Saw a running game that they stayed committed to, and a lot of the passing was off of boot action and play action pass. I think you're going to see more of that. It's interesting. When we come back, not only will we take Mitchell's call, and I think there's an important question about a former Bear and whether or not he's a Hall of Famer that we'll get to as well. This whole conversation about how long the leash is really interesting to me, and I have a thought about that. So Bears conversation continues after the break.
Man, that guy's good at reading. This hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. What's driving the housing market's super low interest rates? You can buy a bigger home for less money. Get pre-approved today in 5 minutes at thehomeloanexpert.com.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
What a great compliment. A 35-year-old guy is good at reading. Bravo, Adam.
Some aren't.
Bravo, Adam.
Some aren't.
Bravo.
Some aren't. Well, you know, done. What? Because of that, we're keeping the soccer game on for the last half hour.
I don't care. At this point, I don't care. Yeah. Oh, I know. It's 5-0. I get it. I know.
5-0.
Yeah.
Cash.
Whatever.
Cash.
Whatever it is.
Straight cash.
I believe that Matt Nagy's talking now, so when we talk to JD at 3 o'clock, he'll have the latest on what the Bears coach had to say about this weekend's matchup with the New York Giants. Mike and Mitchell, we'll get to your call in a second, but I wanted to say this as well. I think we had on our little text chain, we had a little back and forth throughout the game on Sunday about whether or not Matt Nagy was on the verge of making a quarterback change based on what he saw in the first half and then for the majority of what he saw in the third quarter. Now, I will admit, I thought it was very possible because you can't throw away any of these games. And like, if it truly was a competition, it's not like, well, this guy won the job for the year. It sounded like it was a pretty close competition, and they did give up compensation and a lot of guaranteed money to Nick Foles. I believe that the leash is still very short. With the benefit, though, of watching the game and thinking about it now, I don't think even if Mitch had continued to play poorly in the fourth quarter, they would have made the change for the following reason. when you look at the way that the offense was designed for Mitch, it's entirely different than the offense that they will play with Nick if Nick Foles steps in. What you saw from Mitch is predominantly under center. They will run the ball with Nick, but you will run it in a different way. A lot of the pass plays were off of run action. Like, my anticipation is if for whatever reason Mitch doesn't play well and they are forced to make a change, you're going to see an entirely different style of offense for Nick. They're not gonna try to run the offense they run with Mitch with Nick Foles. You'll see Nick Foles predominantly in shotgun. They'll run RPOs, in my opinion, and it will look entirely different. What means that if you're preparing the entire week for one style of offense and you're asking your offensive lineman to play one way with one emphasis, the likelihood that you're going to change in the middle of the game, if you're going to change the offense based on what the other quarterback does well, it's much more likely that that change will come following week, not in the middle of the game. Now, I'm not saying it's completely ruled out, but with the benefit of hindsight, probably was a little hasty to think that they would make a change, even if it was disastrous play in the second half, because when you do prepare for Nick Foles to be your quarterback, if that's the route you go, it is going to look different, in my opinion, with regard to how they play the game. And to the thought that whether or not Mitch bought 3, 4, 5 extra weeks with playing how well he played in the fourth quarter, I don't buy that. Meller and I were texting earlier today, and he asked me. I said, no, I think this is a week-to-week thing. I don't think they're looking to pull Mitch, but let me ask you guys a question. If for whatever reason it looks disjointed and Mitch plays as ineffectively for 4 quarters and they lose to the Giants as he played for 3 quarters against the Lions, do you think because he pulled this game out against Detroit in Detroit, that's going to make him the automatic starter against the Falcons if he plays poorly on Sunday and they lose to the Giants? Because I don't.
No, I think you're right with an asterisk. Yeah. I think that. Yeah. I think that Nick Foles
he reads really good.
He does read very well. Thanks,
I read
Aaron.
Very well. I think that Trubisky is in unless there's an injury to him, obviously, or like catastrophe. Like if dude puts up 5 picks, you can't roll him back out there because then you're just in management mode. Like you're in, like you might lose, like you might break him. You know what I mean? Like he might never be the same after that. So I think that if he's just playing poorly and they're just going 3 and out against the Giants, I don't think that that's a case for bringing in Nick Foles.
See, I think that had they lost to the Lions and they ended up losing that game 23-10, maybe, I think there's a very good chance.
What if Swift catches that touchdown?
No,
pass?
Because I think the fact that Mitch played as well as he did in the fourth quarter in the situations he was placed in, I think that definitely makes him the starter this week. But I ask you, does everyone think just because how longer, hypothetically, are you going to allow him to play if, in fact, he plays poorly? Just because of a quarter that he played against the Detroit Lions? I don't feel that way. I don't think this is play-to-play, half-to-half. But I'm telling you, I don't think it's going to take a ton for them to make a change. If he plays average against the Giants, if he's not the reason why they lose to the Giants, he'll play against the Falcons. If he's a big reason why they lose to the Giants and he plays for 4 quarters the way he did the first 3 quarters, I'm not ruling out a change in the Atlanta game.
I'm not either, because like then he's played 7 of 8 quarters of subpar play.
Right.
And like that right there is enough to see, like, all right, we're not really getting anywhere.
That's why I'm saying,
took advantage of a 4-string quarterback in a fourth quarter, if that's the case.
Right. With the conversation about how long is the leash, I don't think it's like ridiculously short. But I don't think it's ridiculously long either. I think
it's one of those leashes that you can adjust. You know that, like, they roll back into
how
themselves.
I walk my dog with it. Yeah. Yes.
And sometimes you give them a little bit longer leash, and sometimes you cut that off short.
The point I'm making is I don't think the fourth quarter he played against the Lions means he's starting against the Bucs if he plays poorly against the Giants and the Falcons.
There may be some coyotes out there, so you give the dog a little bit shorter leash because you don't want the wolves to be out there for
that's
it.
What I'm
we
saying.
We saw a coyote on the golf course last weekend. It was crazy.
I've seen him in my neighborhood. It's not good. All right, I talked too long, so I didn't get to Mitchell and to Mike, but I promise you that I will get to you, okay? So if you hang in there, we will get to you eventually. Maybe after we talk to JD, because JD's coming up in 2 short moments.